Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, February 11th. What are becoming the 8 most frequently spoken words in the Democratic race for president? They are getting to be these 8 words.
I'm Mike Bloomberg, and I approve this message.
And as Mike Bloomberg continues to spend as much money as the other candidates combined, it is having an increasing effect without his meeting one voter in person yet or having to face one other candidate on a debate stage. Bloomberg has made striking gains in the new Quinnipiac poll, including as the candidate taking the most black support from Joe Biden, as Biden drops precipitously among African Americans in that survey. What's more, maybe you know that New Hampshire voting traditionally begins with a tiny launch at midnight in the almost empty town of Dixville Notch. Do you know about that? A total of 5 people voted in Dixville Notch this past midnight, and 3 of them wrote in Michael Bloomberg, who is not on the New Hampshire ballot. There is breaking Michael Bloomberg news. We'll see how big a thing this becomes. It's audio from an appearance in Aspen, Colorado in 2015, in which he vociferously defended stop and frisk. He said, quote, "Nearly 95% of murders, murderers, and murder victims fit one MO. You can just take a description, Xerox it, and pass it out to all the cops. They are male, minorities, 16 to 25. That's true in New York. That's true in virtually every city. And that's where the real crime is. You've got to get the guns out of the hands of people that are getting killed. So one of the unintended consequences is people say, oh my God, you're arresting kids for marijuana that are all minorities. Yes, that's true. Why? Because we put all the cops in minority neighborhoods. Why do we do it? Because that's where all the crime is." Unquote from Michael Bloomberg in 2015. So that has newly been unearthed and released and is being passed around. And we'll see if that changes his trajectory at all. But the other big news from the Quinnipiac poll, Biden has been replaced as the national front runner among Democrats for the first time. According to that survey, it is now Bernie Sanders, leading Biden by 8 points. Sanders also has an 8-point lead in the final New Hampshire daily tracking poll from the Boston Globe. Buttigieg is second in that, much stronger in New Hampshire than he is nationally. Third place is bunched up with Warren, Klobuchar, and Biden, a few more points behind Buttigieg, who again is 8 points behind Bernie Sanders. But today is the only New Hampshire poll that counts as the voters get their say. Let's start there with Boston Globe national politics reporter Jess Bidgood in Concord. She's been covering the campaign in New Hampshire and was at an Elizabeth Warren rally last night where she found the candidate suddenly revamping her stump speech. Hi, Jess. I'm sure you're going wall to wall, sunrise to midnight today. So thanks so much for giving us some time. Happy primary day.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where are you right now, and is there any early news?
So I am in Concord at the moment, the early news, you mentioned it, is midnight voting returns are in, which is an old tradition in New Hampshire. There's several towns, Dixville Notch, Millsfield, and Hart's location, that vote at midnight and get a little media bump and media attention from that. So with all of that voting done, Amy Klobuchar, Senator of Minnesota, is currently in the lead with 8 votes. Senator Sanders and Senator Warren each have 4 votes. Andrew Yang, the entrepreneur, has 3. And former Vice President Joe Biden, Buttigieg, and Bloomberg each received some votes as well. So that's where it stands. And now we will see what the rest of the state thinks as they file into polling locations over the course of the day.
With that number of votes, it's kind of like a thing we do on this show that we call our informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific exit poll. But it's an interesting little indication. And that Bloomberg thing from Dixville Notch, 5 people voted, 3 of them wrote in Michael Bloomberg. Is that making news around the state this morning in a way that might lead to more of that? Or is that just Dixville Notch?
In New Hampshire, voters are proud of the Dixville Notch tradition. They like that it happens, but I think that they also don't They never view it as representative of the temperature of the rest of the state.
In this Quinnipiac poll, to take the Bloomberg and Biden comparison first, Biden has been consistently leading and leading far and away with black Democrats until this new poll in which Sanders beats him for overall first place by 8 points, and Biden went from 52% national black Democratic support. One candidate in that crowded field had 52% support among black Democratic respondents. That was Joe Biden, and that was consistent for months, but suddenly down to 27%. Who got that vote? Bernie Sanders rose in that category from 15 points to 19 points, but Bloomberg rose from 8% to 22 percentage points. Again, it's one poll, but considering the previous consistency of Quinnipiac's numbers, it's something to watch.
It is something to watch. It is something to watch. I mean, there are a lot of polls. There is a lot of there's a lot of data out there. But I think it is it raises some eyebrows. Since the beginning of his presidential campaign, former Vice President Biden has his a key piece of his argument has been his electability. He likes to say he can beat Trump like a drum. He likes to say that he performs best in head-to-head matchups with the president. And he likes to say that he is the candidate who can win back states that Democrats lost in 2016. Your Pennsylvanias, your Michigans, your Ohio's even. Coming in fourth place in Iowa, even though I think his campaign made an effort to lower expectations for that state, that comes as a real hit to an electability argument. And I do think, as confusing as the Iowa results have been, that voters around the country are looking at and perhaps starting to ask themselves if Biden really is the most electable candidate, and if, you know, if that poll is right, I think that's part of what's going on here.
If you're running on electability, it helps if you actually win some elections, right?
It does help to win if electability is your calling card. Yes.
One of the breakout stories from Quinnipiac last night was this striking rise in his support among African American potential voters in Democratic primaries nationwide, from 8 points to 22 percentage points, almost catching up with Biden and passing Bernie Sanders, who also went up. But now this comes out. Again, this is leaked, I guess you could call it audio, from a 2015 speech that Bloomberg gave at the Aspen Institute in Colorado, defending some of his criminal justice policies like stop and frisk, which he has since apologized for. I guess it was just recorded by somebody in the audience there, and so it was that bad sound quality. But I have the transcript. He did say, 95% of murders, murderers, and murder victims fit one MO. You can just take a description, Xerox it, and pass it out to all the cops. They are male, minorities, 16 to 25. That's true in New York. That's true in virtually every city. And that's where the real crime is. You've got to get the guns out of the hands of people that are getting killed. So one of the unintended consequences is people say, oh my God, you're arresting kids for marijuana that are all minorities. Yes, that's true. Why? Because we put all the cops in minority neighborhoods. Why do we do it? Because that's where all the crime is, unquote. That's exactly what was on that tape. So, Jess, I don't expect you covering the New Hampshire primary to really have much of a political reaction to that at this point. This is new, but it's simultaneous to Bloomberg going up in the polls among black voters, and we'll see how people react to that.
Yeah, I think because Michael Bloomberg has not been competing in the early states like Iowa and New Hampshire, he has had some time to lay the groundwork of a very expansive national campaign. He's also been spending just enormous amounts of money on advertising around the country. But because he's not been competing in these early state nominations, I think he has not been subject to some of the same scrutiny that other candidates have who have been campaigning actively for a year. And that process is beginning now. With a leak like this is going to draw more attention to parts of his record that did not leave both black voters and other voters looking at him favorably. And so he's going to be on the debate stage soon for the first time, and I think that Bloomberg is about to enter a new phase of his campaign where he's going to be subject to a lot more scrutiny.
The 8 most frequently spoken words in the Democratic primary race. I'm Michael Bloomberg, and I approve this message.
Yes, absolutely.
You've been covering mostly Elizabeth Warren in recent days. She was steady in the Quinnipiac poll, 15% before Iowa, 15% afterwards, third place in each case, and around tied for third in the Globe's New Hampshire tracking poll. Your article on the senator was called "Warren Out of the Spotlight After Iowa Undeterred." Why do you say out of the spotlight?
So this past week, after the Iowa results came in, and initially it was not totally clear what they were, once more numbers started to come in, it became clear that Sanders and Buttigieg were virtually tied at the top, and Warren was in third place. And as the week in New Hampshire, as the week of campaigning unfolded, a dynamic emerged where candidates like Sanders, Buttigieg, and Biden were going on the attack. Biden was kind of trying to highlight the risks to that he sees for the party of nominating Sanders and Buttigieg, and there was some back and forth between Sanders and Buttigieg over who had really won. And then yesterday, the two of them took some shots at each other as well. Warren has largely stayed out of that back and forth. That can mean that you have fewer headlines in the moment. Her approach to campaigning this week has been to emphasize this idea of unity and to stay away from attacking other candidates. Another thing that happened this week that may have led to this thought of her being out of the spotlight, which is a headline that my editors wrote, I didn't write, was that she was on the debate stage with several other candidates, and she actually spoke less than both the three leading men on the stage and then Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar. This is kind of unusual for Warren. She has spoken the most at 4 debates and never been less than never been the candidate with less than the third most speaking time. So in some ways, this perhaps has seemed like a slightly quieter week from her, but she has been campaigning in New Hampshire, hitting the trail, doing lots of events, and appears to be working very hard to do as well as possible in the vote today.
The campaign suggested to you that winning the primary in her neighboring state of New Hampshire, Massachusetts next to New Hampshire, she's been very present in their media market. A lot of New Hampshireites get their news from Boston Television, for example, on the outskirts of Boston Metro. So nevertheless, they suggested to you that winning her primary in her neighboring state is not essential to her path to victory. How do they map it out long term?
So several weeks ago, Elizabeth Warren's campaign manager, Roger Lau, sent out a big memo to Warren's supporters and to the media, mapping out what he sees as their path forward. And in that memo, he described the first 4 states as just the beginning, emphasized the fact that they only allocate a very, very small number of the delegates needed to win the nomination, and then laid out how they have a large number of staff all over the country. They have about 1,000 staffers spread across 31 states. So what they are trying to do is show national strength, show the ability to compete, not just in the early states, but in Super Tuesday states and even beyond. That strategy, winning in Iowa, winning in New Hampshire, is obviously something that the campaign would have loved to do. But I think what they wanted to do was set themselves up for the long game. And one thing that could potentially work in their favor with a strategy like this is the fact that the field is still pretty unsettled. It's not clear right now who has emerged as the single front runner, right? I mean, we saw a tie in Iowa. It's not clear how it's going to go here in New Hampshire. Polls in other early states are still moving around. And so their bet is that even if they don't win here, they will be able to notch enough second, third place victories, wins around the country to keep notching delegates and eventually emerge if other candidates rise and fall as a kind of consensus candidate. And she has been positioning herself to do that by emphasizing this idea of her being a unity candidate. When she speaks on the stump, she now talks about how she's hired people from campaigns where the candidate has dropped out, your Cory Booker, for example. Or she talked yesterday about calling Kamala Harris, the senator from California, who dropped out late last year, to talk about a plan of Harris's that she liked and asked her if she could bring it into her platform. So she's trying to position herself as somebody who everybody can agree on as things start to shake out. It will be a difficult path to do it that way. Most of the time, a nominee who wins the party's nominee is someone who has won New Hampshire or Iowa. And when you don't notch an early victory, you lose the boost of attention and fundraising that comes with a win. So there are reasons that a strategy like this will be hard to execute, but this is a historically, this is an unusual field, and they're betting that they can find a way to cut a path through it.
Yeah, and I guess there's so much flux in the Democratic field, she could still emerge as sort of the Goldilocks candidate, which is, I think, what you're getting at. Not as socialist as Bernie, not as centrist as that long list of centrists. But at the same time, as she has floundered in the polls and in the Iowa vote, Sanders has risen. So maybe people who want to bring the fight are just deciding Bernie's the real deal. He is who he always was. He's not trying to game out any lane straddling. And maybe that's why their paths have been diverging lately. Covering her campaign, how much does it appear to be that way?
Bernie Sanders has an enormously devoted core of supporters. People who are not fans of him here in New Hampshire will point out, I can't tell you how many times people have said to me this week, well, he got 61% of the vote in New Hampshire in 2016, and it looks like he's on track to get, less than half of that this time around. But the fact is, this is still a wide field, and if you have a really devoted 25 or more percent of supporters who are not going to leave your side, that is a valuable, valuable thing. And his supporters love how they love how they feel like they've heard the same message from him in 2016 that they do now. And he has been able in recent months to really consolidate some significant voices and groups on the left. Obviously, the endorsement of New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was huge for him. Two other members of the squad, her squad in Congress, endorsed him as well. Liberal groups like the Sunrise Movement have endorsed him. So he has been able to gather a lot of momentum on the left.
The two biggest rallies in the state yesterday, according to press estimates I've heard, were front runner Bernie Sanders with 7,500 people and Donald Trump's New Hampshire rally with about 12,000 people. New Hampshire is considered a swing state for November. Who do you get the sense the Trump supporters are there?
So New Hampshire is a swing state. In 2016, it was very, very, very close. And Trump has a sizable following here. It's also quite possible that some of the 12,000, or perhaps a lot of the 12,000, may have come up from Massachusetts, may have come over from Maine, over from Vermont. New England is so small that when Trump does an event, people really come from all over the region to see it, but there is a there's absolutely, he's got a big base of support here, and in a way, coming to Manchester yesterday was a reminder to all of the Democrats who are campaigning on the idea that they can be the one to defeat Trump, made that project, you know, all the more urgent yesterday.
In New Hampshire, any person can vote in either party's primary, as you know. And Trump urged his supporters to go and sort of troll the Democratic race. Listen to this clip.
We hear that there could be, because you have crossovers in primaries, don't you? So I hear a lot of Republicans tomorrow will vote for the weakest candidate possible of the Democrats. Does that make sense? You people wouldn't do that. My only problem is I'm trying to figure out who is their weakest candidate. I think they're all weak.
Now, that kind of voting booth sabotage is talked about every primary season, but usually by fringy talk show hosts, not by the President of the United States, so hardly anyone has actually ever done it. Any reason to think that this year that could be another norm that falls?
I think that is something that poll watchers will have an eye out for today. Reporters, you know, go to polls, talk to voters, ask about their choices. I think it's something that people will be asking about. There's also another reason, though, that Republicans might go to the polls and vote in the Democratic race. And that came into some relief when a colleague of mine was at a Rotary Club meeting in, I believe it was Nashua, for Amy Klobuchar. There were a lot of Republicans in that room who did not like President Trump and wanted to vote for the best Democrat that they could see to defeat him, and were trying to figure out who that was. Some of them, it seems, were compelled by Klobuchar as being a possible option for that.
We're going to leave it there for now. We thank Jess Bidgood, national politics reporter for the Boston Globe in Concord, New Hampshire today. Jess, great job. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, we want to invite you in on the conversation, too. If you've got a question about a national news item, whether it's something you want to know about the election or the Trump administration or anything else you think might fall under the national politics umbrella, give us a call and leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and your question. We'll collect those and keep them in our pocket for when I'm speaking with someone who can give you a good answer. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255, 844-745-TALK. See you tomorrow.